But the G20 wasn't the only major meeting in Australia last week. Researchers and clinicians from around the world were also attending a conference in Adelaide on alcohol and drug addiction. And amongst the experts was internationally recognised Professor Dr. Kathleen Brady from the Medical University of South Carolina. She specialises in treating adults who've been physically or sexually abused as children. We've known for decades that these people are more likely to abuse drugs and alcohol, and the common sense and obvious explanation is that they use these drugs to mask the pain. But Kathleen Brady told James Carlton that it's actually much more complex than that.
We're actually now able to figure out what happens to the brain as a result of this early trauma that leads to this vulnerability in adulthood. And the more we know about it, the more likely we are to be able to effect brain changes that might re-regulate the brain. So I think that's the really exciting news.
So how are the brains of adults who've been abused as children different from people who haven't been abused?
Well, people with childhood abuse have, not all, now there's sort of a gene by environment, so it depends on your genetic makeup. So if you have the right genetic makeup plus this early childhood stress, when you experience stress in adulthood, you get activation in those parts of the brain that are usually activated by drugs of abuse. So a person with early childhood abuse is more likely to turn to drugs and alcohol when they're stressed. And when they first use drugs and alcohol, they actually have more positive effects, more dopamine release. That's the chemical that we think is at the heart of what makes drugs pleasurable for people, and that those systems are more sensitive in people who have early childhood trauma.
So the use of drugs and alcohol is more pleasurable in some people who've suffered abuse, not because it offsets the pain of the abuse, but because their brain is actually wired differently.
It could be both of those things. It could be that their brain is wired differently in a way that makes them more sensitive to those stress-reducing effects of drugs of abuse. So those two things aren't mutually exclusive.
And this comes to play with, as you say, the stress function, the stress all of us feel in our day-to-day life, and this triggers a flight or fight mechanism. What do we know about that?
Well, we know that the fight or flight mechanism, that's exactly right. When we experience stress, and it's really a functional thing, your heart races, you get more blood to your muscles so that you can either fight or run. You know, that's why we call it the fight or flight mechanism. The thing is, though, when you're not experiencing stress, you don't want those systems to be activated. And unfortunately, what happens with people with chronic drug use and with early life trauma is they get dysregulation in that fight or flight system so that it is abnormally activated most of the time, which is not a good place for the body to be at.
And would that abnormal activation explain why so many alcoholics will describe the sensation of waking up in the morning and not wanting a drink and actually feeling certain that they won't have one for the rest of the day, but by the time it gets to the afternoon, they're a different person?
That's absolutely one of the reasons I think that that happens. I think that's right. Over the course of the day, the buildup of just the small insults of the day may feel a little different to someone who's alcohol dependent and in minor withdrawal and very sensitive to stress. And it may be that the one thing that seems most likely to relieve that, and it could be that their brains are wired that way, is alcohol.
And with this finding, we then have the opportunity that, remarkably, drugs like oxytocin, which induces labor and promotes breast milk, may be used for drug and alcohol problems. How so?
Well, that's exactly right. Oxytocin, in addition to its effects in lactation, also has a brain effects that are interesting, and you can understand evolutionarily why that would be. When someone is lactating, that's the time when you would like them to feel affiliative, non-stressed, to make good good eye contact, good facial recognition of emotions, and so oxytocin oxytocin can make people more receptive to learning, interacting, and bonding with other people. All of these things can be very helpful in decreasing the stress response and making someone more likely to benefit from therapies.
And blood pressure medication, how would that help?
That's a great question, too. You know, the fight or flight system, epinephrine and norepinephrine, is also very involved in the regulation of blood pressure, heart rate, all those kinds of things. But we've found those chemicals also affect stress response in the brain. And if you can block those in the brain, you decrease people's inappropriate stress response.
And what are the prevailing myths of addiction? Is it true or a myth to say drug-dependent people will only get better when they want to get better?
Well, again, that's true, but wanting to get better is something that, it's not like that's all totally inside a person. Your external environment and things around you and people around you can influence your motivation. So I think I'd say it's sort of a cop-out to say, well, there's nothing I could do. They need to want to get better. You can help people want to get better. And if you're a good therapist or a good doctor, that's what you do.
And yet that cop-out argument has been so often directed against your profession that by medicalizing addiction, that is, calling it alcohol and drug use a disease, you're enabling people who make the choice to abuse themselves to say, look, it's not me, it's my addiction. I happen to have this thing like diabetes.
Well, my argument would be if you have diabetes, I'm not saying that it's your fault you have diabetes, but it's certainly your responsibility to take your insulin, to manipulate your diet, to get exercise. So just because you are genetically or as a result of early life experiences end up with a disease, you can't abdicate responsibility for owning that disease and treating it and engaging in the treatment.
That's right. Knowledge is power. Dr. Kathleen Brady speaking with James Carlton.